Once a month, we visit with our partners at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology for a segment we call Underground History. Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov of SULA bring in people and stories about archaeology and the intricate and fascinating process of literally unearthing the past. This week, the Modoc War. The battles between the U.S. Army and a band of Modoc tribal members took place in the Klamath Basin and the lava beds in the 1870s. It was a subject of intense interest at the time and continues to fascinate researchers and the general public, including a researcher who presents his findings in three dimensions. First, let's welcome our regulars, Chelsea Rose in the studio with me. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, great to be here.
Mark Tveskov on the phone from Parts Unknown.
That's right, from Connecticut.
Okay, it's not a secret thing. Good.
Parts Unknown.
Not in the bunker. And Eric Gleason joins us. He's an archaeologist with the Northwest Cultural Resources Institute, NCRI, within the National Park Service. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
So first, let's talk about your work. There are lots of pics of you online at many different National Park Service sites. You stay very busy, don't you?
Yeah, we were working for the National Park Service for about 10 years and working at a variety of different parks within the Northwest region.
What's the general thrust of your research?
Well, it was kind of general. It was kind of focused on the needs of the parks. So if a park was doing some kind of development project or had some other need to do some archaeology, oftentimes we would kind of go out and assist with that project.
Let's talk about the Modoc War. This is maybe not a deflection point, but a pivotal episode in essentially the conquest of Native Americans and the westward expansion of white Americans.
Yeah, it was kind of one of the last major conflicts with Native Americans, certainly on the West Coast and in California. So it started in 1872. By a move by the U.S. Army, kind of in support of local residents, to move a couple of bands of Modoc that had left the Klamath Reservation back onto the Klamath Reservation. And that kind of move by the U.S. Army to do that kind of precipitated the war.
And so it's a fairly well-documented war. I guess I was a little surprised to see some of the names of photographers who showed up to take pictures and to write accounts of what happened.
Yeah, it was, you know, as that war was going on, one of the things about it was that it was pretty accessible. And so the news services sent out reporters. There were reporters from all the major news sources there on the scene of the war. And the war kind of progressed slowly enough and had kind of went in spits or kind of starts. And so there were opportunities for those reporters to come and actually interview participants during kind of the peaceful portions of the war. So, you know, it was just covered worldwide. And like the Illustrated London News sent out an artist to go out and sketch scenes from the war. And eventually the photographer showed up. And they both Lewis Heller, who was a local photographer out of Fort Jones in the Wairika area, and then Edward Moybridge, who was a really famous photographer out of the San Francisco Bay Area, they both came after the second battle for the stronghold. Lewis Heller came kind of as on speculation that he could take pictures of this war and the famous scenes and the participants and sell those images. And then Moybridge was actually hired by the U.S. Army to come out and document the war scene.
Ah, I didn't realize he was hired by the Army. Okay, Moybridge is a really famous figure in photography because if you're familiar with the old black and white pictures of motion studies of people and horses and animals and them walking and going upstairs and chasing things, those were the pictures of Edward Moybridge. But that wasn't the kind of photography he was doing at the Modoc War, I gather.
No, he was actually doing stereo photography, so 3D photography. And, you know, one of the advantages there is that the landscape there at the lava beds is really rough, and just the kind of undulating topography and the rock features and all of that really played a part in the war, and it really made it so that the Modoc could hold out against a much greater U.S. Army force by just using the natural defensives and fortifying those natural defenses to their own benefit. And so the U.S. Army, it was in their interest to go out there and document just how rough the terrain was. And 3D photography was the perfect way to do that.
And so so how many of 3D of those 3D stereographs still exist?
So quite a few. So Lewis Heller took a series of about 21 photographs of the war. And after he took those, he also came back later after the MODOKs had been captured and took studio portraits of most of the major participants on both sides, both the U.S. Army and the MODOK participants that had been captured. And shortly after that, he sold all of those views to the studio of Carlton Watkins, also in San Francisco. And so they mass-produced all of these photographs and sold them to the public.
Which required a special viewer, of course.
Uh-huh, yeah, a special 3D viewer.
We are talking to Eric Gleason, an archaeologist with the National Park Service, about his work on the work that was created at the time of the MODOK War in the 1870s. This is part of our Underground History segment, our monthly visit with Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. They are both with us as well. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let me break for a moment and talk to Mark and Chelsea. Have you guys spent much time and energy over there at all?
You know, that is somewhere where I went a lot as a kid, and I honestly can say that visiting Captain Jack's Stronghold and some of the other archaeological sites around there is where I got the bug to be an archaeologist. So it's a really very fascinating story for me, and definitely has a special spot in my heart.
So visited as a kid. Have you been back as an adult archaeologist?
Yeah, I have. Not as much as I should, but I definitely have been back there and visited, and it's always – there's something about that place that's just – you know, the history is just really fascinating, but also you can kind of feel it, you know, when you're there. I highly recommend it for folks who haven't been down in that area.
And Mark, what are your experiences over at the lava beds?
Well, I've visited a couple of times, and like Chelsea says, anyone who's ever been there knows that it's a pretty special place. And Sula's done a little bit of work at Fort Klamath as well. And, you know, I've reconnected with the lava beds and the MODOK war story through our own Rogue River War research. And Eric's work is critically important in the sense that one of the main stories of that MODOK war is how it was essentially one of our first media events. I mean, it came out at a time with the invention of this new technology, not just the photography, but also the telegraph that came out of the Civil War. So unlike, say, the Rogue River War, this was a war that was covered in real time by embedded reporters who became stars. It's like a modern media event. And in real time, people on the East Coast and the West Coast watched what was happening. And in a sense, the media dimension of the MODOK War drove the events. When Ken Push and the other MODOK leaders were hung at Fort Klamath, that was something that was driven by the public and people taking either anti or pro sides to what was happening. And it was the public sentiment that drove those events so severely.
And this is also really creating the American West narrative and the kind of the stereotypes and a lot of that stuff that we're still taught today. And when people think about early Western settlement, cowboys and Indians, it's a lot of this. You know, this is really key to that beginning of that imagery really making its way into every home.
Oh, really? So this is where it began to. Sure, I can see where in the media of the day it would have gotten deep into popular culture.
That's right. And if it had happened before the Civil War, if the MODOK had left the Klamath Reservation, the settlers had objected and called the Army or the Indian Agency. If this had happened in the absence of the telegraph and photography of media, no one would have ever heard about it, and the events would have been completely different. It was in this atmosphere of basically a media landscape that's recognizable today that drove the events.
Well, and in fact, Eric Gleason, I my mind keeps coming back to the standoff at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, a similar situation where you had one group of people in one area and another group of people in another area who wanted them out, but a long waiting period with a lot of time for reporters and photographers to hang around.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And as Mark was saying, really, kind of that media influence really did influence the war. The public interest really pushed for a peaceful resolution. And so, a peace commission was set up and established to negotiate. And those negotiations turned out not to go very well in this case either.
To put it mildly, yes. Yeah. How many of the stereographs of this war, and photographs just generally, I guess, of the Modoc War survive?
So there were the 21 of Lewis Heller, and we've so far identified 54 Muybridge images of the war.
Wow.
His are a little bit harder to track down because he tended to assign, all of these images got assigned numbers during the publication, but he tended to have like three or four different images with the exact same number. So it makes it a little harder to track down exactly how many he took. Contemporary newspaper reports say that he left the field with 70 photographs, mm-hmm. but so far we've been able to track down just 54.
And so when you say that these were mass produced, Eric, I mean, did a lot of households in the western part of the country have stereo photo devices, and enough stuff to sit there and look at them?
Yeah, it was a pretty popular medium. It was, really kind of popularized after some of the big expositions. And at one point, Queen Victoria had been introduced to the stereoscopic view and really found it fascinating. And after that, it really took off. And it was a really popular form of parlor entertainment. So a family would have a set of cards and a viewer and, would spend evenings looking at them. You could buy entire sets of tours of the world and various other topics. So the Modoc War became yet another one of those kind of sets to kind of buy.
And this predates the ViewMaster that a lot of us knew as kids by about 80 years. We're talking with Eric Gleason from the National Park Service. He's an archaeologist as part of our Underground History segment with Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. The Modoc War, the subject this time around. So Eric, when you present this to audiences, I understand you've used the stereo photographs in ways that didn't involve having to hand out, I guess, viewers to each member of the audience.
Yeah, with newer technology, there's a freeware program that you can get, which actually kind of combines the right-hand image with the left-hand image, and you can really kind of combine that and then use glasses, just like you'd see in a 3D movie, to kind of see those images then projected in three dimensions.
So everybody's sitting in the audience with what look like sunglasses on, looking at the pictures from the Modoc War?
Yep, exactly.
I first saw this at a conference, and they passed out the glasses, and it was so cool.
So tell us about some of the images you saw, Chelsea.
Well, one of the things, because Eric, you built a camera to recreate some of the photos, is that right?
Yeah, I did.
So that was so cool because a lot of times if we're lucky enough to have a photograph, again, it's pretty a flat image, so it's hard to really get the sense of exactly, we struggle with, oh, I think they were standing here and I think they're looking at that mountain. But with the 3D aspect of it, you could really pinpoint down to where this person was sitting or standing right here on this exact spot, and you could really experience, and also that location hasn't changed a lot. So you could really just, it was a whole different way to experience it. So the way the rocks were, and wasn't, if I remember correctly, there was one that had part of a mat on the ground?
Yeah, that would have been, one of the great things about some of these photographs is that one of the ones that Edward Muybridge took was of a campsite, an individual Modoc campsite after it had been abandoned. And, he got there within pretty much a week of the stronghold being abandoned by the Modocs. So things were still pretty much in place. And so, they do a little bit of staging for the photos, but I think generally most of them are pretty intact as to how they looked right after the war. And so this one photograph is of one of the characters of the war, one of the Modoc warriors, Shacknasty Jim's camp. And that had been a subject of kind of great interest as to where exactly Shacknasty Jim's camp was. And when you look at the photograph in two dimensions, it's kind of hard to pick out exactly what's in the foreground and what's in the background. But once you look at it in three dimensions, you can really see the which rocks are in the foreground, which rocks are in the background, and things really kind of jump out at you.
So I want to understand, you had stereo pictures from the time, but have you created some that were not stereo then into stereo now?
No, okay. Actually all of the photos they took were stereo photos.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing because, you know, the process that they needed to go through to make these photographs, it was the wet plate process. So, mm-hmm. So they'd have to take the photograph on a glass plate with their stereoscopic camera and then quickly develop it before the wet emulsion dried. And so, you know, it wasn't very conducive to actually taking battle pictures or anything.
Right.
But it was really, really good at capturing, you know, the way that things looked.
Go ahead.
He took modern photos and made them stereoscope today. Yeah.
Okay. So, Eric, are there plans to do any more presentations on the MODOK war coming up?
You know, I don't have anything mm-hmm. on the agenda, but I'd certainly like to do things.
Yeah, well, it sounds like this is a fascinating thing. Let me close out this segment of Underground History by Lori, letting folks know, as we have been through the week, that we're taking Underground History on the road in person. So we're going to do, without the radio, we're going to do a version of Underground History live at the Common Block Brewing in Medford this coming Monday, January 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. The program actually starts at 7. So Chelsea, who's in the studio with me now, will be there from Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. And do we know the two experts talking about pioneer cemeteries?
Yeah, we have Roger Roberts, who's a former Jackson County surveyor, and Chuck Eckelstein, who is with the Rogue Valley Genealogical Society, and they commonly work around the area trying to relocate pioneer cemeteries using maps, and then they go out and do surveys and stuff. So they're going to kind of show us a little bit about some of the tricks of the trade and some interesting stories from their adventures doing that.
Looking forward to it. That is a live version of Underground History. So actual real people in three dimensions, like the story.
You guys are having all the fun without me.
we timed it specifically for that, but we'll do more of these is the plan. So Underground History live at Common Block in Medford. The doors open at 6, so you can get seated. 7 o'clock, the program starts. Chelsea, me, Roger Roberts, and Chuck Eckelstein. So look forward to seeing you there. I want to thank the folks for joining us today on Underground History here on the radio. Mark Tveskov, always good to hear from you.
Good to be here.
Chelsea, always good to see you. See you again on Monday.
Yeah, thanks.
And Eric Gleason, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.